Day 29, I think, if I remember correctly, the day that we're at. So that means we've got 61 or 60 and a half days. We're now in the middle of it.
Are these 12-hour days?
So lots to do, and certainly you've been aware of what's going on in committee. So the big issue that we talked about was what can we do for TAP's throughput? What can we do to kind of keep our budget as frugal as we can? And how do we stand up for the state? And all those things have been happening. So rather than us kind of rehearse a lot of those things and give you our opinions from this perspective, I think the last couple go-rounds, you've been cut short on time. So today, maybe we'll cut you long on time and just throw it open for questions. So all I'd ask is at this point, the microphone will go out. Just identify yourself. For those of us who have pre-senior moments, because I think I'm the more senior one up here, and I can still call it pre-senior. So, press availability, press is on. You're up.
Becky Borth, the Associated Press. I wonder if you could speak to, I guess, the strategy in addressing the oil tax bill now. It's we have a minority bill that was just introduced. How much time do you anticipate that bill being in resources, and do you expect, given some of the concerns or reservations that have been expressed with the governor's bill, having pieces from the minority bill being melded in? I guess I just wonder what kind of strategy there is.
I can speak to the strategy probably better than I can the details, so I'll speak to that. The issue is to let the Resources Committee deal with it in the substance that they can deal with it. Certainly the governor has proposed a simplified plan. It's not surprising to me that you will have, the minority put their plan out. But I can just tell you, I think strategically, that the governor's bill is going to be pretty much the vehicle. And notwithstanding that, some of the ideas the minority put out may very well fit into it, you know. So I think I don't know that we're going to have a blind eye to it, but the vehicle probably will be the governor's bill, and amended as we will, it's probably going to be the vehicle. So that will be the main strategy. And then letting the resource committee put into it what it thinks is the best available tools for resource development and for the flow of the pipeline, and then let the finance committee generally look at it in the finer forms of if you move some of the trigger points, what does that mean? So I think you're going to see in the finance committee probably the consultants come in at a higher level, but I think you'll see also all the questions are going to be asked in resources committee will hit those same questions. It'll be, my guess is, more finely tuned in finance committee, probably not as retooled as you might have, say, in the resources committee. Apart from that, is there any other?
I just briefly, I haven't had a chance to read the bill that was just put together by the Democratic senators. However, I think what's significant is the motivation for even putting the bill forward. I think everyone dealing with this issue is of the same mind that there is something wrong with the current situation, and we're all trying to address what that is and trying to fix the current situation. I think the Democratic senators, as well as the governor and others, believe that we have an oil flow problem. Our oil flow is declining. And so everyone recognizes that, and I think everyone is going to try and see how we can address that. Democrats have their version. The governor had his. And I'm sure as this goes through the system, there'll be great discussion, great debate. And I think I'm hopeful we're going to come out at the end here at 61 days, is it? 61 days with an approach to oil that will guarantee a future for Alaska with oil.
Any comment?
I think it's been said. We all want Alaska to be successful, and we all want Alaska to be competitive. We all believe it's time to act. The minority bill certainly represents that. They are falling right along with some of the amendments that they've offered. And so, like Senator Coghill, I believe the governor's bill will be the vehicle, and we'll consider those amendments as they go forward. You've all been prepped before that there is a discussion about progressivity already inside of the majority caucus. There is no fracturing. There is healthy conversation about what's right and what could be modified in the governor's bill.
And before I go to you, Richard, I wanted to notice that we have Katie Quinn from Kenai on KSRM radio, and we have Mike Mason from Dillingham on KDLG radio. And I'm just going to offer them the opportunity at this point to chime in. So if there's questions, either let's go to Katie first. Is there something that you wanted to ask specifically, Katie?
No questions at this time. Thank you, sir.
All right. How about Mike?
I wanted to see if there could be follow-up on the progressivity factor. It was something that was discussed long and hard back when ACEs was put in place. The governor's bill seeks to get rid of it. The minority bill seeks to include some sort of progressivity. And you mentioned that there have been discussions. Can you elaborate on those discussions? What kind of numbers are being thrown around in regards to a progressivity factor?
Well, I think we're still in the discussion stage on progressivity. Again, I think the senators that just put forth a bill here yesterday recognize progressivity as an issue. The degree of progressivity is an issue along with others. And so that's a discussion that's it's going to gain speed. And throughout this process, I think through the debate, we'll come up with a compromise and a plan that once again is going to assure that Alaska has a future with oil. I mean, that's what everyone wants. How we get there, that's going to be through the debate process, how we arrive at that.
I think, Mike, you'll see amendments come forward. The governor proposed a very balanced, what he considered balanced plan, and that is to change the credits and the progressivity, thus simplifying the tax structure significantly. We may have to add complexity in order to get the kind of investment that we're looking for. So I think as the questions go forward and the confidence level of the legislature on if we are going to change the progressivity or even the tax structure, what does that bring for investment strategies? And so both at the consultant level and the discussion. So right now it's a much simplified version. The question for the governor was, if we're not getting the dollar for investment into the credits, should we be giving, that money away at this point? So there's those two trigger points. Anyway, the discussion's up. The more you go into progressivity, though, quite frankly, the more complex you get. I think, Rich. Oh, yeah. On that point, I let Senator, Faircloth.
Thank you. Mike, specifically what I was referring to is at a previous press conference, I had said that I wasn't sure that the governor's answer to the elimination of progressivity was the issue. So that's the conversation that I was referring to. At the first press conference that the majority had, Senator Stedman also indicated that progressivity was an answer to a regressive nature of a previous tax and wanted to make sure that Alaska rode up in higher oil prices are a percentage that Alaska would see benefit. So I think that there's a bidding war going on now. The minority is actually thrown out now a 2 to 4, 0.2 or 0.4. So the governor's at zero. So I think all things are on the table when it comes to talking about progressivity.
All right, Mr. Maurer.
So you raised the Democrats. Rich Maurer, Anchorage Daily News. The Municipal League is walking around the halls here. I think Mayor Sullivan is here. And the city of Anchorage is a big issue on the table right now about the mayor's trying to take away some of the privileges and rights that labor unions have had in the city up to now. Not to the degree that happened, say, in Wisconsin or Michigan, but I was just wondering if you see this legislature doing anything along those lines either this year or next, given the makeup, seems like it would be favorable towards reforming or reworking collective bargaining or other kinds of labor issues. Do you see that happening in this session or next?
Well, certainly we have Labor and Commerce Committee here. He may have the first view of things coming that way.
That's not on the agenda. We're focused on oil, as we said earlier, oil, in-state energy, and the budget. So right now, that's not something that we're looking at here in the near future.
actually as a strategy, I think you'll see us so highly focused on getting the fiscal health of Alaska moving forward. That will not be one of the questions. What's going on in the municipality, I do not have all the details on, but it's really an indicator that in times where money gets tighter and tighter, those kind of things will probably pop up. So at this point, you'll even see us as a legislature trying to keep the lid on our budget growth. And it's going to create, I mean, the biggest chunk of our expenses quite often is the people that work for us. But it's also the most productive part of our economy. So you have to kind of keep that in mind. At this point, I don't see us going down the road that Sullivan is, Mayor. Let's go to Channel 2, and then we'll go over to Mike.
Adam Pinsker, KTUU. Senator Coghill, could you talk about Senate Bill 49 you introduced yesterday about what defines a medically necessary abortion and why you're introducing that bill?
Sure. Supreme Court some years ago said that the abortions that are paid for in Alaska only need to be paid for under medical necessity. And they set out under, you know, some pretty good scrutiny what those medical needs were. But they did not require it to be shown. They actually left it up to the legislature. So some years ago, I started talking about it and took a couple of runs at it. But the last 6 years, the way the legislature has been made up, it's just not something that we've been able to deal with. So with me sitting in the judiciary chair, and it's really a constitutional question set out by the Supreme Court on when is something medically necessary and when is it elective based on this constitutional requirement by the Supreme Court, really is very narrowly focused. When is it medically necessary is the question. To me, it's an appropriate answer because the people of Alaska are going to be asked to pay for those things that are medically necessary. And that may, you know, I don't agree with abortion necessarily, but I will say that at least is appropriate. And for those that are more elective, it's probably less appropriate. And so in my view, get that definition as clean as you can, make it answer the constitutional question. So it's really very narrowly focused. Okay, Mike, you had the microphone next.
The expectation is that the industry will make commitments about what they will and won't do in terms of expiration if a bill passes. Have there been discussions about the nature of that expiration? Obviously, field enhancement will get you the quickest return, which we need, but how that divides also to frontier exploration, genuinely new exploration wells. And the other factor is whether they'll define ordinary field maintenance and replacement, so there isn't a mixture between field enhancement. And how do you gain recognition of that kind of commitment?
First of all, that is the discussion, and you went right down into the weeds of the discussion. So it has to do with how we apply the credits. There's no doubt about it. So the way the governor's proposed it, the questions will certainly arise. So I don't know. Anybody want to venture into the weeds
same,
with them?
Well, same thing, though, what you just said, Senator, is as we go through this process, will it become will this process conclude where we have companies that are incentivized to do business in Alaska, not just increase the production, as you said, in the legacy fields, but is Alaska going to be a long-term investment for that type of exploration? And that's one of the key central questions that we're trying to explore. How do we convince folks that Alaska is committed to long-term investment? That slips into other things that we're doing, our spending policies, how we look at investment across the board. As the Senator mentioned, I'm chairing Labor and Commerce, and this is going to be one of the issues throughout this year and going into the next that we're going to be asking. We're going to try and find out what are the barriers for investment in Alaska across the board, not just oil, but many different types of business activity.
I guess what I'm thinking of is the legacy field operators, mm-hmm. and their commitments to move forward, given their tax break to undertake exploration.
Well, there's probably three things there, Mike, and so I wish it was as simple as what you just said, but a lot of it is how do you get downhole improvement, for example, in the legacy field for heavy oil? So, you know, that's part of the discussion going on here. So how much does a state want a partnership in that through some credit system is an honest question that we're asking. So from the legacy field, we know that much of the pay is going to still come out of Kuparuk and Prudhoe Fields. We just know that. That is going to be the case. It's very valuable. But what we don't want to do is we don't want to give a more lucrative benefit to them that doesn't produce anything. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we want them to go forward with whatever new tools they'll have to get some of the heavier oil or some of the tar-like oil out of the bottom. So we're interested in that, just like I think they are. Very valuable to them. It's very valuable to us if we can get it to market. And then trying to get the new fields on is really kind of the question of what kind of oil can you get that really is a blend capacity and value to sell. And I can tell you those are the $2 billion questions that are kind of in before us. So if you move one mechanism, you have to look at four other mechanisms. And they're just now starting to lay them on the table. So I think
their credit is the tax break in the legacy fields. I mean, they're not going to get another credit. Their legacy is the factory reducing their taxes and what they do in return for that. Is that correct?
Well, right now, they have the capital credit. There's no doubt about that, which they can take right off the top. And then they can take some of that over against their, I'm trying to think of the right acronym, but they actually have two credits they can take off this field already. The governor asked a very good question. With that kind of investment, are we just putting money into to their work without getting any new production? I think that's a legitimate question. It's just like we're asking the same question on the exploration fields. Are we paying people to explore, but they can't produce? And I think those are both legitimate questions that as we begin to quantify, you'll probably see those meters moving a little bit. Very good question. Not a simple answer. I'm sorry. I wish, but that is going to be the questions on the table, and you'll see graphs coming from probably five or six different perspectives on those very issues, I think. So am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But what you will see is PFC Energy actually modeling it so that we can see whether the knobs that are turning actually line up with what the governor is saying or whether they move differently than the governor is saying from our perspective. So we're trying to true test the model that the governor's put out to see if he's actually cranking on the knobs that the legislature agrees with.
I think you'll see more of a focus by several on production incentives as opposed to capital investment incentives that may not lead to production. So I think when ACES was put together, there was a belief that the upfront capital credits would lead to production. I think you're going to see more of a discussion along those lines. How do the credits actually increase production as opposed to just increase spending on the part of the companies?
So the quote of the day is, I wish I'd have said that.
if I could follow up, I did briefly read some of the conversation from yesterday's press conference. And, you know, when we point to Armstrong Oil or Repsol or Great Bear coming onto the North Slope, what we were I can't remember because I serve on TAPS and resources, so I'm sorry, I can't remember which presentation it was. But what we were actually told is that those aren't new assets that are going in to be developed now. Those are assets that are being sold from one another so that different companies that are employing different techniques can utilize those under that new asset purchase. So I can try to find that for you, or Senator Giesel, the chairman of Resource, can. I'm sure it will come up again if I saw it in TAPS. But that play is not absolutely unique. It's not new coming to the slope. It's just assets moving around on the North Slope.
Okay.
Pat Forgy, Alaska Dispatch. Question for Senator Dunleavy Moslag, but if anybody else wants to jump in. You've said you were looking at Alaska Hire, and what are some of the things that you may be able to do to boost Alaska Hire? And then is that just kind of trying to get around the Constitution?
No, I think the desire on the part of many is not to get around the Constitution, but is to, again, we feel we have a highly productive workforce here in Alaska, and if there are methods by which we can have discussions with the companies, corporations, to hire more Alaskans, that's what we're going to try and do. But no, there's no desire to get around the Constitution. If we can incentivize in some form or fashion that is constitutionally sound, I think there are several that want to have that discussion with folks.
Yeah, we want to uphold the Constitution. We want it to be the benefit to all Alaskans.
Yes.
And as a mom of two boys, I'd like to see them go to work versus someone flying in from some other country or certainly other state, that they would at least have be first in the opportunity line for being able to get that job. So just concerned as a parent, someone who wants to see Alaskans and Alaskan families benefit from that production or different opportunities in our state.
That back now, any of you?
My understanding is it's the interpretation of the courts in what is acceptable in balance to our Constitution.
I mean, why aren't the companies hiring locally? Is it training or?
Actually, many of them are, but if you look at food processors, there is a need for an extraordinary amount of people in the hundreds at a particular point in time, and Alaskans are either in college or coming out of college.
Right. Pat, I will say this, that we have worked overtime with our students at the K-12 level and at the university level to make sure that the workforce has the ability to pick up our students. A lot of what has happened down through the years has been the requisite requirements for these jobs, they've had to go out and look for them. And it's an international marketplace. And so we're trying to feed both an international marketplace and get people to stay here in Alaska. So our workforce development has been working overtime to make sure that our schooling, our credentialing matches what our industry is doing in Alaska. And so I think we've made some really good progress on that. And that's a big part of it. You can't mandate something you can't deliver. And so a lot of it is how do we deliver it best from the schooling that we have available to us. So there's a young lady ask a question here.
That's a good segue for me. Actually, Shauna Crowell, Alaska Education Update. Yesterday, Dr. Herb Schroeder of ANSEP gave a presentation to the House and Senate Education Committees, and he said students in his program are having trouble getting credit for the ANSEP courses they take from their high schools they're enrolled in. And he said he's even had students who failed to get a diploma because they weren't given any credit for their classes, and others who did not receive an APS scholarship. You know, even though they'd done the work and had the knowledge, apparently it's completely up to local superintendents and school districts what they give credit for. Do you think those students should get credit for that, or should they transfer to the Nenana Cyber School to try to get credit, or?
It's a good question. So jumping right on it, we'll let Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Senator Cockhill. During the interim, I met with our new superintendent, and one of the things on his agenda, as well as mine now, is I've been tasked with trying to draw the department together of education and looking at dual enrollment. So I'm waiting to meet with the commissioner, and I hope to bring forward, at least for consideration, a dual enrollment bill that would allow juniors and seniors that were in high school to actually have benefit of some credits in college. So we are trying to look at that to see how it might work. There could be a big fiscal price tag with that, and so we'll see. But I'm absolutely trying to look at the transferability of those credits.
As a former president of the Amatsu Borough School District, we've, as Herb mentioned, we've partnered with them. And you're right, it's a local decision in terms of do you transfer those credits in. Senator Faircloth has mentioned that there's discussions happening with the department. You'll find over the next probably couple of weeks there's going to be a lot of discussion about education, innovation, different approaches, how do we improve our educational system, and that's one of the reasons why you saw Mr. Schroeder there yesterday. So we're going to keep having these deeper discussions, and I think you'll see some very interesting results.
Thank you.
and it sounded like a question that demands an answer, so thank you very much. Matt?
Matt Buxton, Fairbanks Daily Newsminer. You know, we've talked a lot about energy relief for the state as one of the big priorities for the caucus. Do we have a timeline coming forward as far as what we might be seeing or what sort of work? I mean, we've had a really stringent timeline on oil taxes, but what might we see on energy relief? I think the only bill we really have right now is a trucking plan. So.
Only. Well, we've only been here 30 days, and at least that is a discussion on the table. I know there are a range of other discussions. Some of them will end up at the finance table, primarily in the bill, dealing with what can we do for the Alaska housing rebate issues, what we can do for energy upgrading. The conservation is still probably one of the best low-hanging fruit places we can go for those especially who are stressed economically. So weatherization is still going to be hot on the table. So that's going to be some of the immediate issues. But I will say the getting the trucking of natural gas for the interior, we have several mines that are kind of watching that as closely as possible because it's, so there's some real industrial issues as well as home heating issues there. We're hoping to demonstrate some propane potential off of there so that it becomes a much broader discussion for not only the road system but the river system. So those things are happening in earnest, and the intention is to get some of those things at the finish line before the other 60 days transpire out of here. So we're working on them, I'd say, pretty diligently. Rich? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me you've already had a question, so I'll try to give everybody a shot at it.
Thanks. Alexander Gutierrez, APRN. You all have emphasized in the past that the TAPS Throughput Committee isn't an oil tax committee, but right now the only bill that you have referred to you all is the Democrats' oil tax proposal. And I was just wondering, what else do you have on your agenda, and what are your concrete plans moving forward?
That's a good question. And the committee will have discussions on this, but we're looking at this as a long-term process, not one that ends in 90 days. I mean, we have the governor's bill in caucus. We just, once again, the Democratic senators just put one together. But for the TAPS committee, it is a throughput committee, and it's a standing committee that's going to exist. So we will be talking with the committee members and co-chair McChickie as to where we go from here into the summer, into the fall, to talk about potentially other issues that are impacting investment and oil flow through in the pipeline.
And so, and that falls into the question. We have to look at, like Matt said, things that are very short term. We have to look at midterm solutions and very long term solutions. So I think you're going to see that focus come out of this committee, I mean, out of this caucus. I've got 1 minute left. Rich, if you can do it in 1 minute.
I think so. Your caucus comes today after this. I'm just wondering what you're hearing from constituents on the cruise ship bill and whether you see any amendments sort of floated in the caucus that would change the governor's bill as it exists today.
I haven't seen any amendments to date. It's on the floor, and I understand there are some amendments being prepared. I heard that from the Senate clerk. So how those will play out is an open question. So it'll be on the floor, and we held it in second reading so that amendments can be made. So we will all be surprised, probably, I suppose, by some of the amendments, but many of them we won't be surprised by. So
some will come up in the caucus, I believe.
My expectation is there'll be some discussion about it, yes, but really what happens on the floor is where the discussion will really happen. You'll probably hear only the strategy on how long can we hold it, you know, that type of thing. So really the issue is on the floor for discussion, not in the caucus. So
what are you hearing? I know you talked about it at the Finance Committee, Senator Faircloth.
I'm happy to respond. An area of interest for me on an amendment was critical habitat protection as defined by the state of Alaska. And I did some further digging. And for the people that are raising that issue in the Homer area, it was brought to my attention that their pipe is putting more into the system close to shores than the cruise ships that have to be at least several miles off and en route as far as that mixing zone goes. So that pretty much takes that off the table for me. for the, and that's usually where I'm hearing the critical habitat issue from, is from the Homer region.
So just
to the, sorry, the wastewater treatment facility in Homer.
I am. It's the cruise ship is at a higher standard than their own wastewater that's coming out right now.
So thank you very much. We gave you a full half hour. So thank you very much for coming. We will call this press availability to an end. We're adjourned.